He gave no reason for such submergence and emergence. The catastrophe occurred when England was entering the age of polished stone, or, possibly, when the centers of ancient civilization were in the Bronze Age. In a later section of this book are presented archaeological evidences of vast catastrophes that more than once shattered every city and settlement of the ancient world. Crete, Asia Minor, the Caucasus, Mesopotamia, Iran, Syria, Palestine, Cyprus, and Egypt were simultaneously and repeatedly laid waste. These catastrophes occurred when Egypt was in the Bronze Age and when Europe was entering the Neolithic Age. The Norfolk Forest Bed. As an area is investigated, more problems are raised than are solved. Britain is the land of great geologists, the founders and leaders of that science, and the soil of Britain has been explored more than any other soil on the five continents or in the seven seas. Examination of Britain's record of the Ice Age levels discloses a complex interbedding of drift sheets derived from different sources. When we add the additional complications imposed by thin drifts, scanty interglacial deposits, and the frequent presence in fossil-bearing beds of secondary, displaced, fossils derived from the reworking of older horizons, we get a truly difficult overall problem. All in all, British glacial stratigraphic research has encountered exceptional difficulties, writes R. Incomer, Norfolk, close to the North Sea coast, and in other places on the British Isles, forest beds have been found. The name derives from the presence of a great number of stumps of trees once supposed to have rooted and grown where they are now found. Many of the stumps are in upright positions, and their roots are often interlocked. Today these forests are recognized as having drifted. The roots do not end in small fibers, but are broken off, in most cases 1 to 3 feet from the trunk. Bones of 60 species of mammals, besides birds, frogs, and snakes, were found in the forest bed of Norfolk. Among the mammals were the saber-toothed tiger, huge bear, Ursus horribilis, mammoth, straight-tusked elephant, hippopotamus, rhinoceros, bison, and modern horse, Equus cabalus. Two exclusively northern species, glutton and musk ox, were found among animals from temperate and tropical latitudes. Of the 30 species of large land animals of the forest bed, only 6 still exist in any part of the world. All the others are extinct, and only 3 are presently native to the British Isles. The abundance of animals of so many different species on an island the size of Great Britain caused speculation that at one time it must have been part of a continent and that the Strait of Dover was not then opened. It was Firle Flint, Glacial Geology and the Pleistocene Epoch, remains of 68 species of plants were obtained from the Norfolk forest bed. They indicate a climate and geographical conditions very similar to those of Norfolk at the present day. In view of the sensitivity of plants to thermal conditions, the conclusion might well be drawn that the climate at the time the forest bed was deposited was not different from the present, which conclusion the fauna, comprising southern as well as northern animals, contradicts. The conjecture that the Rhine flowed on to the north across the area at present occupied by the sea, the Thames being one of its tributaries, and that the estuary of the Rhine was for some time at Cremer, that the trees were carried there by the Rhine, that they grew on the banks of the river, and the water washed out their roots and the falling trunks were carried away and deposited as the forest bed. It is necessary to point out, however, that the opening of the Straits of Dover is a geological revolution of considerable magnitude, such as one might well hesitate to ascribe to the comparatively short period embraced by glacial and post-glacial time. Immediately above the forest bed there is a fresh water deposit with Arctic plants, Arctic willow and dwarf birch, and land shells. It is a remarkable change from the climatic conditions of the forest bed below. It is such as to indicate a lowering of temperature of about 20 degrees. On top of the Arctic fresh water plants and shells is a marine bed. Astarte bovilis and other mollusk shells are found in the position of life, with both valves united. These species are Arctic. But, as the bed seems in other places to contain Ostrea edulis, a mollusk, which requires a temperate sea, the evidence is conflicting as to the climate. What could have brought, together or in quick succession, all these animals and plants, from the tundra of the Arctic Circle and from the jungle of the tropics, from lush oak forest and from desert, from lands of many latitudes and altitudes, from fresh water lakes and rivers, and from the salt seas of the north and the south? The shells with closed valves furnish evidence that the mollusks did not die a natural death but were buried alive. It would appear that this agglomeration was brought together by a moving force that rushed over land, left in its wake marine sand and deep water creatures, swept animals and trees from the south to the north, and then, turning from the polar regions back toward the warm regions, mixed its burden of Arctic plants and animals in the same sediment where it had left those from the south. Animals and plants of land and sea from various parts of the world were thrown together, one group upon another, by some elemental force that could not have been an overflowing river. Also, bones of animals already extinct in earlier epochs were carried out of their beds and thrown into the jumble. The finding of warm climate animals and plants in polar regions, coral and palms in the Arctic Circle, presents these alternatives. Either these animals and plants lived there at some time in the past, or they were brought there by tidal waves. In some cases the first is true, as where stumps of trees, palms, are found in situ. In other cases the second is true, as where, in one and the same deposit, animals and plants from sea and land, from south and north, are found in a medley. But in both cases one thing is apparent: such changes could not have occurred unless the terrestrial globe veered from its path, either because of a disturbance in the speed of rotation or because of a shift in the astronomical or geographical position of the terrestrial axis. In many cases it can be shown that southern plants grew in the north, either the geographical position of the pole and the latitudes or the inclination of the axis must have changed since then. In many other cases it can be shown that a marine eruption threw into one deposit living creatures from the tropics and from the Arctic. The change must have been sudden, instantaneous. We have both kinds of cases. Consequently, there must have been changes in the position of the axis, and they must have been sudden. Cumberland Cavern. In 1912 near Cumberland, Maryland, workmen cutting the way for a railroad with dynamite and steam shovel came upon a cavern or a closed fissure with a peculiar assemblage of animals. Many of the species are comparable to forms now living in the vicinity of the cave, but others are distinctly northern or boreal in their affinities, and some are related to species peculiar to the southern, or lower austral, region. Thus wrote J. W. Guidley and C. L. Gazin of the United States National Museum. A crocodile and a tapir are representative of southern climate, a wolverine and a lemming are distinctly northern. It seems highly improbable that they coexisted in one place. The usual assumption was made that the cave received the animal remains in a glacial and an interglacial period. However, the scientist who explored the cavern for the Smithsonian Institution as soon as it was discovered and who returned there in the following years for closer investigation, J. W. Guidley, contended that the animals were contemporaneous. The position of the bones excluded any other explanation. This strange assemblage of fossil remains occurs hopelessly intermingled. The bones of the Cumberland Cavern were for the most part much broken, yet show no sign of being water-worn. 3. This would signify that the bones were not carried for any length of time by a stream. However, it is quite possible that the animals were dashed against the rocks by an avalanche of water that carried them from far off, broke their bones inside their bodies. Thus the bones are not water-worn, and there smashed together all kinds of animals, then gravel and rocks enclosed them. So also it happened that animals of northern regions, wolverine and lemming, the long-tailed shrew, mink, red squirrel, muskrat, porcupine, hare, and elk, were heaped together with animals suggesting warmer climatic conditions, peccary, crocodile, and tapir. Animals that now live on the western coast of America, coyote, badger, and puma-like cat, were in this assemblage. Animals that live in areas of plentiful water supply, beaver and musk, rat and mink, are found in the Cumberland Cavern jumbled together with animals of arid regions, coyote and badger, and those of wooded regions together with animals of open terrain, like the horse and the hare. This is truly a peculiar assemblage of animals. Extinct animals are found there intermingled with extant forms. Death came to all of them at the same time. Any theory that attempts to explain the presence of animal bones from various climates in one and the same locality by a sequence of glacial and interglacial periods must stumble on the bones of the Cumberland Cavern. In northern China, in the village of Chuxian, near Peiping, Peking, in northern China, in caverns and in fissures and rocks, a great mass of animal bones was found. The most astonishing fact was the discovery of this unimaginable wealth of bones of fossil animals, wide and rich. These rich ossiferous deposits occur in association with human skeletal remains. As Wide and Rick began his studies, other amazing, nearly unexplainable features appeared. The fractured bones of seven human individuals were found there. A European, a Melanesian, and an Eskimo type lying dead in one close-knit group in a cave, on a Chinese hillside. Weidenreich marveled. It was assumed that the seven inhabitants of the narrow fissure were murdered because their skulls and bones are fractured. It is possible that these several types of man came together in Chuxian, since the migrations of ancient man were on a greater scale than is generally thought. But the finders of the conglomerates of bones were perplexed also by the animal remains. The bones belong to animals of the tundras, or a cold, wet climate, of steppes and prairies, or dry climate, and of jungles, or a warm, moist climate, in a strange mixture. Mammoths and buffaloes and ostriches and Arctic animals left their teeth, horns, claws, and bones in one great melange. And though we have met very similar situations in various places in other parts of the world, the geologists of China regarded their find as enigmatic. No conclusive evidence can be derived from this faunal assemblage as regards the prevailing temperature at the time when it lived, says J. S. Lee in his Geology of China. Some animals point to a rather severe climate, other animals to a warm climate. It is almost inconceivable that animals of such various habitats should live together. And yet their remains are found side by side. It is asserted that since before the age of man, since late tertiary times and through the time of the Great Ice Age in Europe and America, northern China experienced progressive desiccation interrupted by pluvial intervals. Arid conditions prevailed over northern China and the general absence of ice, sculptured features led the naturalist to the conclusion that in northern China, as in northern Siberia, there were no glacial conditions and no formation of ice cover. On the other hand, certain obscure facts not in agreement with the foregoing interpretation are accumulating throughout the country. Erratic blocks and striated boulders are found in the valleys and on the hills. But if there was no ice cover in northern China or in Siberia to the north, what was it that carried the bones of animals into fissures in the rocks? And what striated the rocks and transported boulders far from the source of their origin and high onto hills? At the same time, convincing evidence was brought forth that the mountain ranges in western China have been elevated since the glacial age. Ancient and marine sands and clays with the shells of sea mollusks have been found exposed on the surface of the ground. Borings made in the same location showed the presence of sand and clays with fresh water shells down to a depth of more than 507 feet below the marine layer which is exposed on the surface. Thus signs of both recent elevation and submergence are present. Was not the erupted sea the agent that threw together the animals of various latitudes and carried rocks of foreign origin to the tops of hills? Did not the mountains that sprang up in the age of man rise in the upheaval that also moved the seas out of their borders? Were not animals of various habitats swept into fissures, human beings with them? When mountains rose, seas erupted, rock debris was carried toward summits, and climate changed. The fossils of Chuxian are found embedded in a reddish loam, a mixture of clay and sand, the deposition of which belongs to the same stage as the fossils. This reddish loam occurs extensively all over northern China. Teilhard and Young concluded that the observed coloration can neither be a quality inherited from the original material of which the loams are composed, nor a condition brought about by slow chemical processes long after their formation. The coloration of this widespread formation being of some extraneous and unexplained origin, The only definite statement concerning it is that some violent change of climate, in itself not the cause of the change of color, occurred immediately before the deposition of red loams, or soon after the deposition. Similar observations were made in other parts of the world. Drift, the displacement of which is attributed to the ice cover, is often found tinted a reddish color. R. T. Chamberlain, looking for the origin of this hue, offered the hypothesis that granite pebbles were decomposed, the liberated iron staining the drift reddish. H. Pettersson, of the Oceanographic Institute at Gothenburg, Sweden, on examining red clay from the bottom of the Pacific, found that the abysmal clay contains layers of ash and a high content of nickel, almost completely absent in the water. Pettersson, whose work will be described on a later page, attributed the origin of nickel and iron in the clay to prodigious showers of meteorites, the lavas of the oceanic bedrock he recognized as of recent origin. All this points to a great shower of ferruginous dust at a recent geological date, when the red clays of the Pacific, the drift of the Western Hemisphere, and the loam of China were deposited, and when the climate also changed. The asphalt pit of La Brea. At Rancho La Brea, once on the western outskirts of Los Angeles, and at present in the immediate neighborhood of the luxurious shopping center of that city, bones of extinct animals and of still living species are found in abundance in asphalt mixed with clay and sand. In 1875, some fossil remains of this bituminous deposit were described for the first time. By then, thousands of tons of asphalt had already been removed and shipped to San Francisco for roofing and paving. Beds of petroleum shale, rock of laminated structure formed by the consolidation of clay, ascribed to the Tertiary Age, having in many places a thickness of about 2,000 feet, extend from Cape Mendocino in Northern California to Los Angeles and beyond, a distance of over 450 miles. The asphalt beds of Rancho La Brea are an outcrop of this large bituminous formation. Since 1906, the University of California has been collecting the fossils of Rancho La Brea, a most remarkable mass of skeletal material. When found, these fossils were regarded as representing the fauna of the late Tertiary, Pliocene or early Pleistocene, Ice Age. The Pleistocene strata, 50 to 100 feet thick, overlie the Tertiary formations in which the main oil-bearing beds are found. The deposit containing the fossils consists of alluvium, clay, coarse sand, gravel, and asphalt. Most spectacular among the animals found at Rancho La Brea is the saber-toothed tiger, previously unknown elsewhere in the New or Old World, but found since then in other places too. The canine teeth of this animal, over 10 inches long, projected from his mouth like two curved knives. With this weapon, the tiger tore the flesh of his prey. The animal remains are crowded together in the asphalt pit in an unbelievable agglomeration. In the first excavation carried on by the University of California, a bed of bones was encountered in which the number of saber, tooth and wolf skulls together averaged 20 per cubic yard. No fewer than 700 skulls of the saber-toothed tiger have been recovered. Among other animals unearthed in this pit were bison, horses, camels, sloths, mammoths, mastodons, and also birds, including peacocks. In the time following the discovery of America, this region of the coast was rather sparsely populated with animals. Early immigrants found only semi-starved coyotes and rattlesnakes. But when Rancho La Brea received its skeletons, there lived an amazing assemblage of animals in Western America. To explain the presence of these bones in the asphalt, the theory was offered that the animals became entrapped in the tar, sank in it, and were embedded in asphalt when the tar hardened. However, the large number of animals that filled this asphalt bed to overflowing is baffling. Moreover, the fact that the vast majority of them are carnivorous, whereas in any fauna the majority of animals would be herbivorous, otherwise the carnivores would have no victims for their daily food, requires explanation. So it was assumed that some animal, caught in the tar, cried out, thus attracting more of its kind, and these were trapped, too, and at their cries carnivorous animals came, followed by more and more. This explanation might be valid if the state of the bones did not testify that the ensnarement of the animals by the tar happened under violent circumstances. Oil from which the volatile elements have evaporated leaves asphalt, tar, and other bitumens. As the greater number of the animals in the Rancho Labrea beds have been entrapped in the tar, it is to be presumed that in a large percentage of cases the major portion of the skeleton has been preserved. Contrary to expectations, connected skeletons are not common. The bones are splendidly preserved in the asphalt, but they are broken, mashed, contorted, and mixed in a most heterogeneous mass, such as could never have resulted from the chance trapping and burial of a few stragglers. Were not the herds of frightened animals found at La Brea engulfed in a catastrophe? Could it be that at this particular spot large herds of wild beasts, mostly carnivorous, were overwhelmed by falling gravel, tempests, tides, and raining bitumen? Similar finds in asphalt have been unearthed into other places in California, at Carpinteria and McKittrick. The depositions were made under comparable circumstances. The plants of the Carpinteria tar pits were found, with one exception, to have been members of the recent flora, or of the flora now living 200 miles to the north. Separate bones of a human skeleton were also discovered in the asphalt of La Brea. The skull belonged to an Indian of the Ice Age, it is assumed. However, it does not show any deviation from the normal skulls of Indians. The human bones were found in the asphalt under the bones of a vulture of an extinct species. These finds suggest that the time when the human body was buried preceded the extinction of that species of vulture, or at least coincided with it. In a turmoil of elements, the vulture met its death, as did possibly the rest of its kind, with the saber-toothed tiger and many other species and genera. Agate Spring Quarry. In Sioux County, Nebraska, on the south side of the Niobrara River, in Agate Spring Quarry, is a fossil-bearing deposit up to 20 inches thick. The state of the bones indicates a long and violent transportation before they reached their final resting place. The fossils are in such remarkable profusion in places as to form a veritable pavement of interlacing bones, very few of which are in their natural articulation with one another, says R.S. Lull, director of the Peabody Museum at Yale, in his book on fossils. The profusion of bones in Agate Spring Quarry may be judged by a single block now in the American Museum of Natural History in New York. This block contains about 100 bones to the square foot. There is no way of explaining such an aggregation of fossils as a natural death retreat of animals of various genera. The animals found there were mammals. The most numerous was the small twin, horned rhinoceros. There was another extinct animal with a head not unlike that of a horse but with heavy legs and claws like those of a carnivorous animal, and bones of a giant swine that stood 6 feet high were also unearthed. The Carnegie Museum, which likewise excavated in Agate Spring Quarry, in a space of 1,350 square feet, found 164,000 bones, or about 820 skeletons. A mammal skeleton averages 200 bones. This area represents only 1/20th of the fossil bed in the quarry, suggesting to Lull that the entire area would yield about 16,400 skeletons of the twin, horned rhinoceros, 500 skeletons of the clawed horse, and 100 skeletons of the giant swine. A few miles to the east, in another quarry, were found skeletons of an animal which, because of its similarity to two extant species, is called a gazelle camel. A herd of these animals was destroyed in a disaster. As an Agate Spring Quarry, the fossil bones were deposited in sand transported by water. The transportation was in a violent cataract of water, sand, and gravel, that left marks on the bones. Tens of thousands of animals were carried over an unknown distance, then smashed into a common grave. The catastrophe was most probably ubiquitous, for these animals, the small twin, horned rhinoceros, clawed horse, giant swine, and gazelle camel, did not survive, but became extinct. There is nothing in their skeletons to warrant regarding them as degenerate and doomed to extinction. And the very circumstances in which they are found bespeak a violent death at the hands of the elements, not slow extinction in a process of evolution. In many other places of the world similar finds have been made, and in one of the sections to follow we shall discuss the famous bone quarry of Siwalik. In the United States, Big Bone Lick, Kentucky, 20 miles south of Cincinnati, contained the bones of 100 mastodons, besides many other extinct animals. President Jefferson gathered there his famous collection of fossils. In San Pedro Valley, California, skeletons of the mastodon are found standing upright, in the posture in which they died, mired in gravel, ash, and sand. Fossils found in John Day Basin, Oregon, and the glacial Lake Florissant, Colorado, are embedded in volcanic ash. In the southern states, fossil bones are quarried for the commercial exploitation of phosphates. In Switzerland, a conglomerate of bones of animals that belong to different climates and habitats was found in Kesselloch near Thangin. Alpine types are the in one tiramis with animals of the steppe and of the forest fauna. 2. In Germany, a gravel pit at Neukölln, a suburb of Berlin, disclosed two faunas, mammoth, muskox, reindeer, and Arctic fox suggest herboreal climate, lion, hyena, bison, ox, and two species of elephant suggest varying degrees of warmer climate. The faunas were interpreted as belonging to two periods, glacial and interglacial, but the bones were found altogether. It seems probable that the relations are more complicated than has been realized. There has not yet been found a satisfactory climatic interpretation. Great multitudes of animals that filled prairies and forests, water and air, forms, fragile or sturdy, with an urge to live and multiply, were more than once suddenly called upon to write their names in the register of extinction. Chapter 6, Mountains and Drifts, Mountain Thrusts in the Alps and Elsewhere. The age of a rock formation is ascertained with the help of the fossils it contains. To the surprise of many scientists, it was found that mountains have traveled, since older formations have been pushed over on top of younger ones. Chief Mountain in Montana is a massif standing several thousand feet above the Great Plains. It has been thrust bodily upon the much younger strata of the Great Plains, and then driven over them eastward, for a distance of at least 8 miles. Indeed, the thrust may have been several times 8 miles, writes Daly. By similar thrusting, the whole Rocky Mountain front, for hundreds of miles, has been pushed up and then out, many miles over the plains. Such titanic displacements of mountains have been found in many places on the Earth. The displacement of the Alps is especially extensive. During the building of the Alps, gigantic slabs of rock, thousands of feet thick, hundreds of miles long, and tens of miles wide, were thrust up and then over, relatively to the rocks beneath. The direction of the relative over-thrusting movement was from Africa toward the main mass of Europe on the north. The visible rocks of the northern Alps of Switzerland have thus been shoved northward distances of the order of 100 miles. In a sense, the Alps used to be on the present site of northern Italy. Montana Blanc was moved from its place and the Matterhorn was overturned. Those portions of the Alps that surround the valley of the Linth, in the canton of Glarus in Switzerland, have lower parts of tertiary formations or of the age of mammals, their upper parts upper Permian, preceding the age of reptiles, and Jurassic, of the age of reptiles. This impels to one of two conclusions. Either the division of rocks into sequences based on the fossils they contain is fallacious, or the old mountains were moved bodily and set on the shoulders of more recent formations. The latter conclusion is chosen, and if Dassausch's notion of the sea sweeping over the Alps appeared fantastic, the idea of mountains traveling considerable distances must sound even more fantastic, unless we know of a physical cause that could have brought it about. But even the very, here word not to interpret, of mountain building itself is obscure. The problem of mountain making is a vexing one. Many of them, mountains, are composed of tangentially compressed and overthrust rocks that indicate scores of miles of circumferential shortening in the Earth's crust. Radial shrinkage is woefully inadequate to cause the observed amount of horizontal compression. Therein lies the real perplexity of the problem of mountain making. Geologists have not yet found a satisfactory escape from this dilemma, says F. K. The origin of the mountains is not explained, and still less is their thrust or shift across valleys and over other mountains. The Alps were shoved 100 miles to the north. Chief Mountain in Montana traveled across the plains and climbed the slope of another mountain and settled on top of it. All of the Glacier National Park in Montana and all the Rocky Mountain area up to the Yellowhead Pass in Alberta moved for many miles.